All right, welcome back. Nothing like playing air drums to Steely Dan at 1 o'clock in the morning here in Los Angeles. Check this out. I don't know if you've seen this this image over on the coast site, but a research fishing expedition off the coast of Portugal snagged this shark, and it turned out to be the elusive frilled shark. Now, that has existed, frilled shark, on Earth for over 80 million years, but it's very rare. And this thing is 5 feet long, and it's not the size, it's not its rarity, it's its teeth. And if that isn't what nightmares are made out of, go over to Coast AM and click on that picture. You've got to go and check it out. All right, live in the studio with us is Bryce Zabel. We've been talking about his book, Once There Was a Way. We've been talking about UFOs and Roswell and disclosure and everything else. And I'm going to get to all of your phone calls that are here. Now, I've got a few that want to discuss the Beatles, but I've got about 10 lined up that want to talk UFOs. So we'll get all of those in right after this short break. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, live in the studio, Bryce Zabel. Now, we're talking about his book, Once There Was a Way, about the Beatles staying together. But, he also produced and wrote Dark Skies, the series, and The Crow. And he's got a couple of other things in development with Roswell and also the Betty and Barney Hill story. And he wrote AD After Disclosure with Richard Dolan. So, as far as the UFO agenda, he knows what's going on. We have JFK, we've got the Beatles. I've got all of these phone calls coming up, so let's just get straight to it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's go to Dave in Lake Tahoe. Dave, you're up next on Coast.
Good morning, gentlemen. Really interesting topic you got here. I'm a musician for about 45, 50 years. I do a lot of Beatles and Stones and all of that, and I got stories I could tell you. I play with one of the Stones and played with Buddy Guy for quite a while and stuff like that, but that's not what I call about. I think that you can tell from the devil's advocate about Paul McCartney or Billy Shears, you could tell that after in the later days that the Paul's writing was more on the piano, and I believe Billy Shears was more of a piano virtuoso. And it was very talented and was able to, play the bass. Because when you hear the early Paul McCartney bass, he was an incredible bass line player. His melodies were just incredible. And then as the songs got old, and then when you see him live after the band, after he supposedly maybe or whatever disappeared or died or whatever, when he does his shows, he doesn't play the bass like he did in the earlier days,
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I never really thought about that. I always thought he was a pretty accomplished bass player, and especially for a lefty. Okay, all right, there I
And his
said.
eyes, and let me say something else. His eyes in the earlier pictures are real round, and his nose is like pug. And later, his eyes are like wider and thinner, and his nose is long and skinny. I don't think it's the same guy. And then talk, say, mention, talk, say something about Billy Preston. If you would, I'd like to hear where you feel he fit in all it, because I thought he was an integral part of all of the music throughout the years.
Yeah, there's no question about that, Dave. And thank you for the phone call. What do you think
Sure.
about that, Bryce? Billy Preston's influence, was he the fifth Beatle?
Well, they thought he might be literally when they were recording with Billy Preston. Lennon famously said, "Let's bring him in. He'll be the fifth Beatle," only because at the time that Billy had come in to record with the Beatles on the Let It Be album, or yeah, anyway, yeah, that, right. The problem was that they were getting along so poorly that the addition of a stranger, basically not a stranger, they all knew him, they'd played with him, but the addition of someone besides the Big Four, the Fab Four, actually helped. It helped them all sort of have someone else in the room. It's sort of like, if a husband and wife are having an argument, but then somebody else is in the room, you're going to try to tone it down. That dynamic was working for the Beatles, but obviously it wasn't to be. He was just a kind of a mellowing influence on them at a particularly bad time.
All right, let's go to, well, the longest on hold. Let's go to Sid in Abilene, Texas. Sid, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, man.
Good morning, Sid.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Bryce.
I'm here.
Back in 1987, I was in Hobbs, New Mexico, and I visited my father-in-law. His family and my family was all in the house, and me and the father-in-law was still outside. We was cooking, and I was looking down the road at the end of the road, and I seen this figure come way out in the middle of the road down at the end, and then turn right down the center of the road and come running straight down the highway like that.
What was it?
It was alien.
It was an alien? What kind of alien?
I don't know. It had a big helmet. It had a real big helmet. It looked like it had a torso that was shorter than his legs. And it looked like he was under his feet. You could see his feet look like it's on stilts.
Wow.
And it was running somehow, like it looked like it had feet, but you know, at the bottom they were robotic or something.
Well, what's your Sid, excellent encounter. What's your question for Bryce?
I really didn't have a question. I just wanted to tell him about that.
Oh. Okay, I got you.
But let me ask a question of your caller then, Sid. If that had happened today and you had a cell phone with you with a camera, would you have had time to take a picture of this alien running down the street?
Yes, sir, I would have.
All right, so hopefully that would mean that if that kind of thing happens again, our chances of actually getting the kind of evidence we could look at might actually exist.
Yes, sir.
Well, that'd be good. I hope that happens.
My father-in-law seen it too, and he looked at me and I looked at him at the same time, and we both said, "Did you see that?" And the dogs start chasing it at the end of the fence line and running along with it, barking at it, and it went behind the van, my brother-in-law's van, and I didn't ever see it come out on the other side.
Very similar. And Sid, thank you for the phone call. And I'll tell you, Bryce, we just had an experience up, well, it was at eSETI, with a Bigfoot sighting where after the Bigfoot was, it was behind a van and then went back behind, and nobody saw it come out from the other side of the van or where it went. Oddly enough, the sighting was from Peter O'Toole's son.
Hmm.
Yes, and who we had on this show to talk about it. But there you go. It's that's where it comes into maybe an interdimensional aspect or parallel world aspect that you and I were talking about earlier, where these sightings, whether it's in the sky or on the ground or a Bigfoot or ET or some that they appear and disappear very quickly without going anywhere.
I'm always reminded of that quote that's kind of famous in these circles, and it's been attributed to three different people, so it's hard to say exactly who said it, but it goes like this: the universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it is stranger than we can imagine.
That's right.
And I tend to think that we do not have the final say right now. We do not have that answer as to what exactly is going on.
Right.
And it may not be one single thing, it may be multiple things. And the simplest thing would be to say, well, they're from someplace out in space and they've come here. But in reality, it could be dimensional. It could be time travel. I wrote a movie about the UFO phenomenon being a time travel situation. That was the first. By the way, I'm celebrating my 25th year of doing UFO film and TV, because the first thing I ever did was a Sci-Fi Channel movie called Official Denial, which was about being time travelers.
Right, right.
It was a better script than movie, but thank you for that. So I just don't know. I think that the jury is out on that. I think what we do know, and it goes back to where we started the show, we know that something's out there. it's probably not us, and we haven't figured out what it is yet. Or somebody, some humans have figured out something about it. They just haven't shared openly with the rest of us. So we'll. I hope that the next 10 years will probably give us some answers.
Well, the idea for time travel coming into play here, that it is just us visiting ourselves, coming back to check up on things, alter timelines.
Well, that would explain what we talked about. Yes.
The Mandela effect.
Yes. Yes. And it would explain what you were talking about earlier, that... Well, and I just lost my train of thought
About Paul being alive.
Well, no, I think it is kind of ironic that we're willing to accept aliens on stilts running down streets, but I'm arguing with you about whether Paul McCartney's been replaced. It's, you know, if half of what we've just talked about is true, then I guess Paul McCartney could be replaced. What do I know? But we live in a time, and we're discussing issues here that we are compelled by, but and we are fascinated by, but we are being we're at arm's length to the truth still, and I think that's what fuels this show, and it's something that's it's an itch that can't be scratched without the truth.
I wish the audience could have heard us our dialogue during the break. They would have. You know, we should, did you record that, by the way?
Well, listen, I knew I was going to come on the show and talk a little bit about the Beatles, but I did not know that I was going to get into exhaustive detail about whether or not Paul McCartney was dead. And had I known that, I probably would have been a little bit better prepared, but now I will be. So
no,
thank you.
It's called open conversation.
I'm open. I'm wide open.
With that, let's go to Wild Card. Now, we've got a call in coming in from Korea, so we're going to take that next, but... David in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. You're up next on Coast.
Yeah, hi. I can talk about two things, I guess. But the one I said I would was about Paul McCartney being buried and then the whole idea of John Lennon. If the Beatles had stayed together, then Lennon may not have ever moved to stay and live permanently in New York. He may have moved and lived somewhere else. The Beatles may have stayed in England. And so he would not have been in the place where he was eventually found to have been assassinated.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
The butterfly effect thing. Like
absolutely.
If he got time, I had a UFO experience, at least what I think could have been.
Well, make it really quick, David, because we're up against a break right now.
I will. I was working offshore on an oil rig off Newfoundland, and I saw something out of the corner of my eye. I was sitting at the table having lunch, and... it looked like a plane flying up right across the front of the side of the ship. Too damn close to be a plane. So I went up to the deck, and there was the first mate alone on deck, looking way off into the horizon, obviously looking at something, and he was just steaming mad. First of all, how could something that big get so close to the ship? It was unreal. And it was just gone very quickly, and it's okay, I don't know what it was, but it shouldn't have been there. And it couldn't be a plane. A plane can't fly that close to the ship. I mean, I was there, and I could not see details of it. I know there was something there. I couldn't see markings or wings or nothing else, but something was there.
There you go. And thank you, David, for the phone call and sharing that with us. And have a great, safe rest of your weekend. Absolutely. Let's go to international. Let's go to Hanny in Osan, Korea. You're up next on Coast.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is George Harrison. I'm calling you from beyond the grave.
Yes, you are. No, a reasonably good impression, I might say.
Yeah,
that
bad.
Was good. Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad.
Actually, I've got a comment and a question.
Okay, George.
First of all, no, I'm Hanny.
I know, Hanny. Come on. Okay, really quick, Hanny.
Okay, I'm from California, born in 1960. I was a Beatle freak at age 4 in elementary school. I was buying all their albums. I have recently seen, and I also wanted to say that, you know, after they broke up, as 4 individuals, we got a ton of great music from all of them. And I'm real satisfied with the history as it went. But my question is, I recently saw a YouTube video, I sent an email about it. It's called The Last Will and Testament of George Harrison.
Yep, I've seen it.
The producer in L.A. received some anonymous tapes. And I don't know that much about it, if it's, like, proven to be authentic or not authentic, but it's narrated in George Harrison's voice, but I'm not like 100% sure that it's his voice. It could be a, you know, someone like me trying to imitate him.
Right.
But after watching it, you know, after watching it, I felt like I understood their whole history much better. And he, you know, he says Paul McCartney died in a car accident.
Hanny, let me just say this. What was interesting about that, and I'm glad that you brought it up, when you have films like that that are realistic, you know, but they're not a real documentary, but they're well done and they're well acted and it's well written, and we all like to say, what if? I mean, look at Spinal Tap. That fooled everybody for years, and it's a comedy, right?
Oh.
You understand what I'm saying?
I wasn't fooled.
I was. I was definitely fooled. The first time I saw Spinal Tap, I thought I had to go back and study who Nigel Tufnel really was. I had to get out all of my Guitar Player magazines and wonder how I missed this band.
And you were wondering, how can I get an amp that goes to 11?
I did.
Yeah.
I absolutely did think that. So, but Hanny, you can understand why the Harrison documentary would fool people.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you know that it's been, whether it's been authenticated or not?
No, I haven't, but this is what I thought. Have you seen it, Bruce?
No, okay. I have not.
All right, well, I have, so I can comment. I thought that it was a well-done, funny project that somebody put together. Okay, done to fool people because it addressed all of the what-if points.
Right, right. That's what it was, I'm sure.
Yeah. I did think that as well, and I went into it thinking, you know, that it wouldn't be all that convincing, but it was actually the explanations of, you know, why the Beatles broke up, why there were conflicts with John and Paul, why John moved to New York City, you know, why he started acting wacky at times, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, Hanny, you're right, and it reminds me of, and thank you for the phone call all the way from Korea. Thank you so much, Hanny. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Well, I'm from California, and I, you know, a little homesick.
Well, we miss you, Hanny. All right, man.
All right.
It is this. Do you remember, Bryce, we've got 45 seconds.
Okay.
Do you remember when the Kubrick films came out last year of Kubrick admitting that he did the Apollo hoax and how he did it, and we had a Jay Widener on the show talking about it here. Now, it turned out to be just an actor, right?
And then, of course.
But for a minute, it had people fooled. And if you do it right and you're addressing the what-ifs, you can fool people.
Well, that's quite true, and that's what I think the McCartney thing is, but let's not go there again. You know, the interesting thing about the Beatles breaking up is that it's generally we believe that McCartney is the guy that broke him up, but the truth, because he's the guy that announced it, Ringo quit the band in 1968 for a couple of weeks. George quit the band in early 1969 and had to be brought back. Lennon's the guy that quit it in 1969 at the end of the year. And it was only because everybody else was sort of discontented that McCartney ended up announcing that he was leaving. So he's got a bad rap by, you know, that, but that's not even the real McCartney, apparently. So what do we know?
Live in the studio, Bryce Zabel. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More with Bryce after this short break. This is Coast to Coast AM. Now, if you enjoy when I host Coast to Coast here on the weekends and you need more of your fix of this kind of stuff, check out my show. It's called Fade to Black. And to get to it, it's very simple. Go to Coast to Coast AM, look at my name, click on it. It'll take you straight over to our website. And this is why it's so great. First off, we broadcast Monday through Thursday live from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific, right before Coast to Coast starts. We end. So you can get yourself a 7-hour paranormal conspiracy supernatural fix on 100% live. Our show is free. All you got to do is go click and check it out. Also, follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. I am a big social media guy. So everything that we do, everything on the show, I respond to everything is right there on Twitter at JChurchRadio. All right, here we are, late in the fourth quarter. We have Bryce Abel live in the studio, and we're going to get to the rest of your phone calls right after this short break. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM, live in the studio, Bryce Abel. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'm going to try to get all of these phone calls in, but this one's interesting. I'm going to go to Bob in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Bob, this sounds pretty incredible. You want to explain this?
Yeah, I'm a retired corporate pilot, and Paul and Linda McCartney, when they were with Wings, charted our Gulfstream for a week while they were on tour. And they had a home in the Hamptons, so we used to fly them from the Hamptons to a concert and then return in the evening, and they spent the night at their home. We did that for a week, and Paul used to sit up in a jump seat on the way back. And by the end of the week, we got pretty friendly with him. But on the last night, I remember I asked him, I said, you're supposed to be dead, aren't you? And he put his head down and laughed, and he said, it's amazing what people think. We've had a good laugh over that. And
okay, so Bob, I'm just going to ask you straight up. Were you selling what Paul, were you buying what Paul was selling?
Yeah, I don't think he had any reason to lie or, you know, he was pretty outgoing and friendly by the end of the week, you know, so I believed him.
Well, there you go, you know, and I really appreciate you, you know, sticking your neck out there and calling into a national radio show like this and telling us about that, because that's a pretty private, personal moment, right?
Yes, and by the way, after 30 years of flying, I have never seen a UFO. Kind of disappointed about that.
Now, how come you knew that was my next question, Bob? have a great rest of your weekend, my friend. Thank you for the phone call.
All right, you're welcome, Bubba.
There you go. Well, okay. You know, do you feel vindicated?
No, not at all. I mean, and by the way, it's interesting. People always ask, as you did at the beginning, have you ever seen a UFO? And the answer is no. And people ask me, have you ever met a beetle? And the answer is no. But it doesn't mean you can't talk about it, know about it, write about it. I don't know that Paul, if that guy was the imposter, Paul McCartney, I would expect him not to tell this pilot. So who knows?
Oh, now see your mind.
Taking your point of view there for a moment.
Wow, man. He
just trying to fit in on the show, which, by the way, I also wanted to just tell your listeners how much I like Fade to Black. It's a great show and it's worth listening to.
Thank you for that.
Please don't hate me for not agreeing about McCartney.
There you go. Well, let's go to Frank in Hollywood. He wants to talk about Paul. Frank, you're up next on Coast.
Howdy, guys. Glad to be back with you. This idea is perhaps the most patently preposterous premise for a program ever perpetuated on the public. Now, what about the funerals? What about the relatives? What about the royalties? I mean, how can you have royalties going out from two people? Did people talk about where's the proof? I mean, it's a good sell. I mean, it's an interesting story.
I'm with him. I just want you. And by the way, sir, I hope you understand. I'm the guy that doesn't believe McCartney died.
Right. I know you don't, but a lot of people do. You have two left-handed bass players that look alike or had some plastic surgery, both great songwriters.
Right.
And they seem to have the same theme of songwriting. But incidentally, my favorite Beatles song is My Guitar Gently, which the title I don't like. But when George collaborated with Eric Clapton, Eric Clapton's lead guitar and George pitching in with an acoustic guitar, I overlooked this song on the White Album back when it first came out. I didn't really start listening to this song until the 1980s, actually.
Yeah, I kind of went through the same thing, Frank. But this is what, and thank you for the phone call. This is what I find interesting about all of that is we have to always question everything. The moment that we stop doing that and believing everything, that's the wrong path. You can't believe everything that you're told. You can't believe everything that you read. You just can't do that.
No, but the burden of proof on a case where you say Paul McCartney got substituted by another guy, the burden of proof falls on the people who want to make that statement, not on the people who say Paul is Paul.
Well, but my point is much broader than that. It's not about Paul. It's about life in general. You have to question everything.
Well, I wouldn't be here if I didn't question everything. I question JFK's assassination. I question UFO truth. I question a lot of things. But I guess it's the journalist, and I guess I'm a reformed journalist or whatever, but I still think just because some extraordinary things are true doesn't mean that everything is true, obviously.
Right.
So you always, you know, I agree with your point of view, but we do question everything, but we demand a standard of proof. And particularly if you're going to try to impress the American public to accept UFO reality, you've got to seem grounded. So that's why I like earlier cases, and I like cases with multiple witnesses, and you know, a case where hundreds of people on an aircraft have seen a UFO pacing that aircraft. I love that case better than one person seeing an alien running down the street. Because I can at least apply a standard of proof to the former and not to the latter.
Well, yeah, and we've all gone through that.
Yeah.
I totally agree. All right, let's go. This is interesting. Let's go to the first-time caller line. Virginia in Oregon. Virginia, you're up next on Coast.
Hi. I was born in 1959, and in about 67 or 68, my family went to Atwater, California to visit my uncle, my dad's brother, who was an Air Force pilot, and he had really high clearance on stuff. He was involved in a lot of different things.
Right.
And he pulled out pictures and started showing them to us of a crashed spacecraft. And then he showed us pictures of a dead alien and then one that was alive in a big glass room in a secret base.
What year, Virginia?
I'm going to say 67 or 68.
That's extraordinary.
That is extraordinary
because in 67 and 68, the truth of the matter is if you started babbling about crashed flying saucers and body recovery, people would just shut you down.
Yeah, because things didn't really take off in that area until 1980, which is going to be Bryce's next film. Okay, I cut you off, Virginia. Well, sorry about that.
It was pretty shocking, you know, to see what we saw. And the thing that convinced me that it was all real, what he showed us, is years later when my uncle passed away, within an hour of his death, the Air Force was at his house confiscating all of his pictures and videos and all of the proof that he had of aliens. I mean, they cleaned that house out, made my aunt sit outside, and they took everything.
Wow. So that's it.
Yeah.
The pictures are gone.
The pictures are gone. The Air Force has them.
Virginia, you know, this sounds like a really good case. Was this your father? Is that what you said? Or?
It was my father's brother.
Your father's brother, so your uncle.
He lived in Atwater, California, and he said, you know, he had told us he had seen many different crafts and stuff when he was flying for the Air Force and taking pictures and stuff. And then he, you know, like I said, he showed us this whole thing of the crashed spacecraft and a dead alien.
Do you recall what the alien looked like in these photos?
It looked like the grays that you hear about all the time with the bigger head and the long arms and legs. And, you know, the one was in a glass room, and he showed us a video he had, I don't know, on recording. I'm sure they didn't have video back then, but he showed us this movie he had, and it was moving in this room, and it was just bizarre, you know, and I kind of questioned it. I was such a little girl, you know, but then years later when he passed away and we got word that the Air Force went in and confiscated everything.
Now, did your
family had it, but, you know, as soon as he was gone, they were there taking it all.
Virginia, before, and we're at the end of the show, and I want to thank you for the phone call, but did your family continue to talk about it before he died? I mean, was this like, you know, Thanksgiving dinner with the family sitting around? Did you guys talk about this?
Once in a while, my father would bring it up because, you know, he truly believed in spaceships and aliens and all of that. But mostly it was kept quiet. Now they're all dead and gone, and it's like, well, I can talk about it now.
Wow, great experience.
Yeah, it was really incredible what he showed us. And I have no doubt that it was all real because of the way they acted when he passed.
Thank you for the phone call, Virginia, and have
Thank
a great
you for sa- time.
Absolutely. And just have a great, safe rest of your weekend. The secrets that family has.
Jimmy, the Air Force doesn't tend to go to people's homes and tear them apart when they're looking for nothing and they think the people are lying and there's no real evidence.
Right.
I mean, what possible reason would you have to do that? We don't know enough we don't know the caller and we don't know the case in detail, but that's the kind of case that deserves a sit down. That's the kind of case that deserves some investigation behind it, because you can prove certain things about that. And there's multiple witnesses, and it's a good case.
All right, Virginia, you can contact Bryce at brycezabel.com. There you go. And is that where the books are available there too as well?
Yeah, they are, although the easiest thing to say right now is AmazonBeatles.com. Right. AmazonBeatles.com, that's the URL.
Okay.
It takes you straight to the book.
Okay, there you go. All right, let's get back on the phones here. Let me see. Okay, you call it East or West?
I'm a West Coast guy. Let's go West.
You want to go West? Let's go to Max in Sausalito, California. Max, you're up next on Coast.
Hey, Jimmy, love the show, love the bumper music.
Thank you, Max.
I got a bit of a space conspiracy for you. You know, in 1969, we went to the moon. We did six or seven other launches to the moon. We spent national treasure on that. And then they told us, we're not going to the moon anymore.
Allegedly, right?
Anybody actually believe that? Then,
right.
then we had the space shuttle, and they told us that they were launching satellites into Earth orbit, and they were supplying the International Space Station, and so on and so forth. Right,
right.
Well, let's fast forward to the year 2008. I think it's like 2008, and it's getting close to summer. I'm in Sausalito. I'm on Issaquah Dock, which is the houseboats. My next door neighbor is a scientist, a vision scientist. We talk a lot when I see him, and I'm outside talking to him about 4:30 in the afternoon on the dock. Beautiful day, and you ever see the full moon out in the daytime, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, right. And we're just talking, and the flowers are out, and we look up, and on the moon at about the 7 o'clock position. Right, 7 o'clock, is this on the edge of the moon at 7 o'clock? Is this bright, 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 bright light?
How bright was it, Max?
I'm talking if you were looking at Long Beach shipyards from a distance down there where you guys are, or up here looking at the Port of Oakland,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can see those shipyards. It was very bright. You can see it. If you were in an airplane, you know, flying over the Bay Area, or flying over Los Angeles, you could see those the ports, right?
Well, what happened next?
What happened was, for over 30 minutes, that light on the edge at the 7 o'clock position never changed position, and it stayed the same. And we kept waiting for it to kind of, like, you know, do something, and it didn't. It just stayed that way. And so we didn't really know what it was. We said, well, maybe it's a star, maybe it's a satellite, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, but it never, ever moved. And what we both kind of thought was, there's something up there. And I wonder if we really did not stop, if we still have people going to the moon. It's just that we don't know about it. A moment ago, you said, don't believe everything you hear, everything you say.
Right.
We learned about the Kennedy thing, 50 years later, they released the information. I'm wondering if they actually have some sort of base up there that's been supplied. We've got things going on. And I've been wanting to tell you guys that for a long time, because I did see it. My neighbor saw it. And, you know, there's something going on, brothers. And that's all I wanted to say.
Absolutely, Max. He's convinced that there's something going on there.
Well, I think he's also making a point about something that seems obvious to a lot of people. Why would you bother going to the moon as many times as we did and then stop forever? I mean, why would you do that? That doesn't make sense. And that's 50, almost 50 years ago now. The last time we went, according to the Apollo program, would have been 72, which is 45 years ago. Why do you stop? Your technology only gets better. Why do you stop?
Well, I'm when it comes to questioning everything, and you never know, you know, what is going on. When it comes to the space program or the Air Force or the military, none of us, and I mean none of us, are on the inside. Okay? And those that are on the inside are not talking. And I need to be very clear. We're going to be wrapping up the show here, but it's this is the truth. I come from a military family. This is Veterans Day. The military
lifestyle. Shout out to all the veterans today.
Absolutely. I'm doing it right now. When you live on an Army base or a military installation, you are in a military family. You are going to military schools, military shopping, the commissary, the PX. You live at gas stations. You live in this bubble, right? Now, when you go off base, that now you're in the civilian atmosphere and you're out of your element. I'm telling you. The way that the military deals with themselves, they're not talking to each other. You don't know what the guys are doing across the street on a military base. Everybody respects that, and they're doing their job. And that's just that lifestyle. So if something can be kept secret, I lived it. I witnessed it, you know, and that's just the way that it is.
Secrets are kept. I mean, that's the truth. We managed to keep the entire Manhattan Project a secret. That was a lot of people involved in an entire town. So obviously secrets can be kept.
Entire towns.
Towns, exactly.
Plural.
Yeah.
And if a colonel lived off base, right, and which happens, you know, and his family is living in your neighborhood, and you know that he's in the Army, is he blabbing what
no.
he does to his neighbors? He absolutely is not. And the neighbors respect him for that. Hey, Bryce, I want to thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
You did 3 hours of live radio.
How does
tonight.
It go so fast? How does that happen? I think we're in some kind of time-space warp in this room.
Well, I did 4 hours. You did three.
Well, that's true. I barely showed up then. You're right.
But wasn't it fun?
I love it. I love Coast. I love working with you. I think it's always fun. You've got great listeners. It always challenges me, and I'm a better person for it. It's great.
Thank you so much, Bryce. Now, all of Bryce's links and how to get Once There Was a Way are right there on the Coast website. And go and check it out. And again, everything is available on Amazon. So that wraps another weekend for me here on Coast to Coast. I want to thank, of course, Nathan manning the boards, Donna behind the glass, of course, Chris, Greg, Sean, Tim, Lisa, Stephanie, George, and Tommy. Until next time, I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Go Beckley Tappy.